Chapter 12. Ruminations of the Gods. Drizzt sat on the railing of the large deck, about the main back door of the Monastery of the Yellow Rose, his cloak flapping behind him in the brisk wind, whistling down through the narrow passes of the Galena Mountains. The season was quickly changing, the leaves turning and falling away, and the air had that crisp feeling of forthcoming snow, with gray clouds rushing overhead. Drizzt loved this time of the year everywhere he had lived, with the exceptions of Menzo Berenzon, which had no seasons, and Icewind Dale, where autumn was just winter with a bit more light, after all. The smell in the air, the dance of falling leaves, all of it, just brought to him a sense of peace and calm. Maybe that was because many of the conflicts he had known had ended in the fall, pressed to completion by the promise of a war-stifling winter. He smiled widely as he watched Bree rushing about the leaf-speckled grass, hopping into a pile of leaves that Savan kept putting back together for her. The sheer joy of the child's play was so obvious and infectious. Or maybe it wasn't just play, Drizzt speculated. At least not for the monk. Savan was mistress of winter, the third-ranking monk at the monastery, with only Grandmaster Kane and Master Periwinkle Shin, an old man well past his fighting prime, ahead of her. Earlier that 10 day, Kane had mentioned to Drizzt that he expected Savan to become the first female Grand Master of Flowers of the Order of St. Solars in many years. Her only rival in her ascent had been Brother Afafrenfir, and alas, he was gone. Drizzt's smile mellowed when he thought of the man. Afafrenfir had transcended his physical form and used every bit of his spiritual strength to pull Drizzt back from eternity at the cost of any chance he, Afafrenfir, had of returning. Because of their soulful joining in that spiritual state, Drizzt understood the man's reasoning, but still, he couldn't escape the pangs of guilt. Afafrenfir believed that Drizzt had more reason to return than he. With a child on the way, a family strong and growing, Drizzt wasn't done in his journey through this life. Afafrenfir's every call had claimed. But Brother Afafrenfir was ready and willing to transcend the physical world. He believed that his partner in life, his lover and best friend, the monk brother named Parbid, who had given him true meaning and direction, was waiting for him in a shared existence on that higher plane. Drizzt hoped that was true, both for Afafrenfir and for himself, and for all those others he loved. He wanted there to be more. For some reason, only a 2-year-old could know. Bree gave a tremendous roar then and proclaimed herself a task. She lifted her hands like monstrous claws and stomp-walked towards Savan, who feigned terror and began to run away, the little girl in close pursuit. Driz's smile returned. But was this just play, he wondered again. He had the feeling that Savan was evaluating his daughter, as if trying to get an idea of when the child might become an appropriate candidate for the ways of the monastery. Drizzt had already told Kane that he would like such training for Bree, but also that she would not be a sworn member of St. Solar's, at least not until she was old enough to truly make up her own mind regarding such an important life decision. That hadn't bothered Kane at all. Drizzt had never converted to the faith. He still wasn't sure if what the monks had here was a faith in the traditional sense at all, and from the teachings of the monastery, the saint in question seemed more an example of true devotion to personal discipline and purpose than to any godly handmaiden. And perhaps more than anything, that was what appealed to Drizzt about the monastery. Yes, he would very much like the idea of Bree spending a lot of time here with the goodly monks. She moves, as I would expect, of the daughter of Drizzt Owerton, came Kimuriel's voice behind him. She's not yet 2, Drizzt replied with a laugh. He turned his head to look over his shoulder as the psionicist approached. When did Kimuriel become the purveyor of empty praise? Is that your way of asking what it is that I want from you? Drizzt laughed again. It could be. He grew more serious immediately, though. I am grateful that you came out on the road to protect my daughter in our journey here.
It was my half of the bargain I hoped to make with you.
And for the company, on those few occasions we spent together, Drizzt added. I cannot say that those nights we spoke weren't Interesting. Certainly you've surprised me of late. I'm glad. You had your desired meeting with Grandmaster Kane?
I did.
And he did not disappoint, I'm sure.
He's beyond what I would expect of any human, Kimoriel admitted. His wisdom was much appreciated.
For what? What is it you seek?
Answers.
To that most elusive question of all? Drizzt said with a nod. I doubt Grandmaster Kane did much to help in that regard.
He let me into his mind, Kimoriel said. And so, intimate with his memories, I now better understand the feeling of transcendence.
Drizzt hardly heard the second sentence, for he was still stuck on the shock of the first part.
He let you into his thoughts?
He invited you into his mind?
Yes, the psionicist said matter-of-factly.
But Drizzt couldn't even find the words to respond to that.
Because he was confident that he could expel me with ease, Kimoriel explained.
Was he wrong?
No,
Kimoriel admitted, still matter-of-factly. And if he was surprised or even humbled by the experience, he wasn't showing it.
I told you. He was much more than I would ever expect of any human.
So he let you in there, and he gave to you his memories of transcending the physical form.
And now I understand better.
But of course there remain limitations on that understanding, because such an act may or may not be a permanent state of being.
There's only one way to find out the truth, Drizzt admitted.
I am in no hurry to leave this life.
Drizzt didn't question that, for he felt much the same way. His transcendence fleeing the retriever had given him great comfort and hope in what might come next, but he knew that he could not know the permanence of that experience. He could not dismiss the notion that it had been no more than a trick his mind had played on him to ease the transition as his spirit diminished to nothingness.
We are leaving in the morning, Kimoriel told him.
In a hurry to be away from this place, then?
Kimoriel smiled. Would you choose to ride with us?
The winter winds will come on fast, and we'll be fortunate to beat the snows to Luskin.
Drizzt considered it for just a moment, then shook his head.
I have no business back there at this time.
I'll stay with Bree.
This is a good place for her.
Caddy Bree will come for me when she returns, I am sure. And I would like her to spend some time here as well.
The discussions are stimulating, even enlightening. It is always good to speak of that we cannot fully know, to gain the hints from others who similarly ponder.
As I found my discussions with you,
Kimoriel said.
Why?
Kimoriel looked at him curiously, a rare expression from the drow who could so easily slip secretly into the thoughts of another person. But he hadn't on this journey, Drizzt knew. Not to Drizzt, at least since Drizzt had asked him not to, not even once.
Why everything? Drizzt clarified.
You are suddenly so concerned with the gods and the afterlife.
I've never known of such questioning from you.
I never thought of them before.
Not truly and deeply. The gods seemed inconsequential to me in a spiritual sense, and more a matter of pragmatic survival, particularly in Menzo Berenzon. As to the rest, with possible centuries of life left before me, contemplation of the meaning of death seemed remote. And probably pointless after all.
But now?
As I said, I never bothered to deeply think of it before.
Before what?
Before I aided Evanel and Matron Mother Quenthal in their search of Matron Mother Evanel's living memories,
Kimoriel admitted, which was what Drizzt expected and hoped to hear.
What did you learn?
That in the end, there is no place to hide.
Perhaps there is nothing there in the end from which you'd wish to hide.
Kimoriel nodded and smiled, but kept the conversation moving forward.
No divine justice? He asked.
Is an afterlife a matter of the choices we make, then?
Do they decide?
Those are the questions facing my kin, our kin on a grander scale now, Drizzt Owerden. Those are the choices stark before them in the city of our birth. They are going to war against each other, do not doubt.
I don't doubt it. What I doubt is whether the answers you seek will do anything about that.
I think they will. And even if not, I seek these answers for my own sake. Consider it, Drizzt Owerden. Why do you seem to so easily spurn religion itself?
Spurn is a strong word.
Even when you found me a leaky, you did so only conditionally, Camoriel reminded him. You have admitted as much repeatedly. You placed yourself, your conscience, above her. Drizzt started to argue the point, but paused and considered his fights with Catti Bree over the true nature of orcs and goblins. Is that not spurning religion? Camoriel asked, as if reading his thoughts. Drizzt realized, though, that Camoriel didn't need any mental intrusions to know what he was thinking at this time. I cannot deny it, he said. What is religion, Drizzt Del'Urden? That seems a wide question. What is it based upon? Camoriel asked. Morals? A code? Camoriel scoffed. To hear morals ascribed to Loth is unexpected. Loth is a false religion. And Mialiki, who tells you to wantonly kill goblin kin, whom you believe might not be inherently evil? That, Drizzt stopped before he started, caught in the Psionicist's trap. What is religion based upon? Camoriel asked again sharply. Fear, said Drizzt. See? We agree. It is based upon the fear of death and what might or might not come afterward. Take that away and churches would be no more than mediators of commonwealth, if that. The gods of Toril promise power or riches or sublime comfort, even unbridled sexual gratification in exchange for worship. They command us with threat or with pleasure, but only because we fear that we have so much to lose elsewise. That's why you came out here, Drizzt said. To be truly free. Yes, said Camoriel. I have lived for centuries, hiding away in the hive mind or in a library, trying to make sense of that which ultimately I cannot, for these destinations can only be answered when the road is finally traveled. But now I believe that I have come to the limit of my potential understanding of this unknowable matter until that final journey. And so you have escaped the fear. I have. Gone now was the coercive power of the gods, the terror of their warnings, the allure of their promises. Now I can see the world as it truly is before me, and make my decisions as best serves my own sensibility, like with the coming events in Menzo Berenzon. Camoriel knows which side he will fight with then. I do, if I choose to fight at all. I am just trying to decide if it is worth the effort. That notion initially struck Drizzt oddly. If Camoriel knew which side was right and which wrong, did it really matter if the notion of some eternal reward lay in the balance? Really, though, Drizzt now understood that he believed the same. Yes, he tried to do good in the world and for the sake of the world, for the sake of community and those he loved. But if he didn't believe in something beyond this life, would he be so quick to sacrifice his remaining moments of consciousness, of existence itself, for just those external rewards? Yes, he would, he knew, and had thus lived his life, even surrounded by the doubts and the fears. It is worth the effort, he asserted to the Psionicist standing before him. An intellectual who lived too much in the realm of the mind and not enough in the realm of the heart. I know you believe that. Drizzt held up his hands, not about to deny it. And I hope you are right. And that's why I ask the questions I do. Who knows, my friend? Perhaps we will soon stand side by side on the streets of Menzo Berenzon, doing mortal battle against those who decide to remain in the thrall of the Spider Queen. In that event, can I count on Camoriel to stand with me no matter the odds? You ask a lot, Camoriel replied. But then he flashed a rare smile and went back inside the monastery. Yes, Drizzt mused. He was glad that Camoriel and the others had come out to join him on this journey. That night, after Bree had gone to sleep, Drizzt wandered out onto the back porch of the monastery and into the darkened yard so that he could bask in the starlight. His talk with Camoriel had given him hope, both for the Psionicist and for his people in their coming great struggle. There were many drow of similar heart to his own, he knew without doubt. The vast majority of them, likely. They had been smothered by a demon goddess, but now the veil of darkness had been pulled back. Would he go to Menzo Berenzon for the fight that was surely to come? A big part of him wanted no involvement with any of this. Not now. He wanted to focus on his family, on their future together, For so long he had battled for the good of the wider world, and now, perhaps, he was due his rest. But this current situation was the crystallization of that which he had most wanted in all the struggles of his life. This could be his greatest contribution to his kin and his homeland. It could secure that future he hoped for. Or it could be his death, and all for a cause that had little chance. Loth would not let Menzo Berenzon go without a terrific and terrible fight. He lay on the leafy ground and let the millions of spots of light in the sky lift him up among them, as he had done so many times before. Sometime later, he headed back into the monastery. He stopped by Bree's room to check on her, then made his way to the small meditation chapel reserved for the masters, where he expected he'd find Grandmaster Kane. It was a simple place with four benches set along the rim of a shallow pit, the whole of it open to the sky. At the bottom was a garden, mostly grass, but with a few flowers bringing color about its edges. The middle of it was an X formed of white stones of various shapes and sizes. Kane was staring at that X, sitting up on a bench, his legs tightly crossed beneath him. "They are leaving in the morning," Driz told him, and he nodded. "Camoriel is quite grateful to you.
He seeks answers.
He feels that he has learned a lot.
He seeks answers to questions that cannot be answered in this life.
He understands that," Drizzt assured the Grand Master.
"I know. What he seeks most of all is a place where his understanding of the physical truths about him coincides with the hopes for the next part of the journey within him. If I gave him some valuable insights into his own heart, or some comfort against his fears, then I have done a good thing. Again, you have my thanks for agreeing to speak with him."
"I owe you the thanks, Drizzt," Kane replied. "You have granted me the opportunity to do a good deed in the world, and that is no small thing." Kane went back to staring at the stones set below. "Will you leave with them?" the monk asked a few heartbeats later.
"I hope to stay longer."
"You can stay forever, of course. This is your home, if you ever wish it to be." Drizzt gave a quick bow of respect, although Kane wasn't looking at him. "Have Jarlaxle's associates heard from him?"
"From Ketty Bree?"
"No," Drizzt answered. "Which surprises me, I admit."
"And worries you?"
"It does."
"You know not how far they went?
The northernmost north?"
Drizzt held up his hands.
"If so," Kane continued, "then they might find that magic is not quite the same up there. You've been there?"
"I've been to the northern reaches of the Great Glacier, even beyond them. I was with Alwyn Forest Friend on that occasion, a ranger of great reputation and power, and a disciple of Mialiki. His magical spells didn't work as powerfully up there, I recall, and even Treefeller, Olwyn's axe, felt unwieldy to him. Perhaps it was just the cold wind chattering his teeth and numbing his fingers."
"But you don't believe that," Drizzt surmised.
"It was different up there, as it is in the Underdark. If they are in the farthest north, then they might be discovering that old things do not work as they believed, and might well discover many new things in their place."
He went back to staring at the X of stones then.
And Drizzt did too, falling within himself. He didn't find Kane's words comforting. Magic was the crux of Caddy Bree's power, after all. Kane did not seem to notice when he chuckled a moment later, as he reminded himself that what he was going through now was something he had put his beloved Caddy Bree through on more than one occasion over the last couple of years. How she had stayed within her wits when he had gone to the deep Underdark, he did not know. "Trust her," he reminded himself. "Trust in her." Caddy Bree was among the most resourceful and powerful individuals he had ever known. And she was with Jarlaxle, who befriended dragons and toyed with kings. And with them, too, were Zacnafane and Intrary. And Drizzt didn't doubt their loyalty to him, to Caddy Bree, to the companions of the Hall, or their skill as warriors.
"She is okay," he told himself, repeating it like a mantra as he fell deeper within himself through the peaceful image of the white stones. lit by the stars and a half moon hanging in the sky above, shining a bit brighter than the dark garden that held them.